listening to the Voice Behind the Pen podcast, created and hosted by author and screenwriter S.C. Dickens. New episodes are released every Monday and Wednesday night and can be found at www.theauthorscdickens.com. On Mondays, S.C. interviews a fellow author, and on Wednesdays, S.C. interviews an artist in the film industry. Be on the lookout for members-only exclusive episodes and content, also found at theauthorscdickens.com. While you're on the site, be sure to sign up for S.C. Dickens' Virtual Book Club. S.C. hosts monthly virtual video gatherings for like-minded folks, where you'll get together and discuss the featured book of the month. This is a great way to meet some new people, make some friends, and the best news is that it's free. On the site, you'll also find SC's Author for Hire services, where you and SC can brainstorm ideas, and he will write anything from a short story or skit to a novel or full movie script that you'll be able to use as your own work once completed. Stop by the store page on the site to purchase books written by author S.C. Dickens. S.C. has ebooks available as well, so you don't have to wait on shipping. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, send S.C. an email via the email link at the top of the site. There, you'll also find links to all of S.C.'s social media accounts. Thanks again for listening. So get comfortable, grab whatever your go-to is to let loose, and please, enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Voice Behind the Pen podcast. I'm your host, author, and screenwriter, S.C. Dickens. Come join me today as I dive into the mesmerizing world of acting through the lens of a seasoned performer, Tony Hale III. Come join me as I uncover the stories behind the characters, the movement, the motions, and the transformation in the relentless pursuit of artistic expression. In this podcast, I will invite you to embark on a journey with me, guided by the world and experience of our guests. From the spark of curiosity that ignited his passion for acting to the intricate process of character development, we will discover the rituals and preparation our guest undertakes before stepping into a new role and learn how he navigates the highs and lows as an actor's life with resilience and grace. Hear about the challenges faced on stage and screen and the moments of revelation and refine their understanding of themselves and their art. Explore the dedication balance between commercial success and artistic intelligence. And grace insight into the creative process from script to performance. Without further ado, let's join our guest, Tony Hale III. Good evening, Tony. How you doing, man?
Doing amazing, man. Yourself?
I'm doing great, man. I can't complain, you know? Mm-hmm. Nobody cares. Everybody's going through their own thing, you know?
Man, what you said. It feels great to be back again, man, and talking with you and having good conversation, man.
Yeah, hopefully I appreciate what I say today.
Hopefully what I say today enlightens a lot of people.
Yeah. Man, listen, I appreciate you coming on to the show, man. And you know, every Monday I interview an author and every Wednesday I interview someone in the film industry. And with you being on the film industry, I wanted to interview you this Wednesday. So I want to ask you a question. Can you share the story of how you got into acting?
Most definitely, man. You know, every time someone asks me that question, I always say that it kind of happened by accident. You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember back when I was in high school, I didn't have an elective, right? And I had to have an elective in order to you know, graduate. And I remember I was sitting in the guidance counselor's office and, you know, she told me that all of the other electives were taken, you know, and then she said the only one that I could really take was theater. And I was like, I don't know if I'm really going to like theater. You know, I mean, it's not the one that I really wanted to take. But, you know, I was like, forget it. And I needed it to graduate it, so you know I did it. And so I remember when I went into the class, and I still talk to this woman to this day. Dr. Niambi Webster was my first theater teacher. And she saw something inside of me. And she wanted me to give acting a try and take it serious, right? And I was like, I don't really want to do this, but, you know, I'll give it a try, man. And I remember I had auditioned for a school play. It was called The Pool of Life, and I played the antagonizing character. I played the Reaper, and we had a full house full of people, man. I'm talking, I had never performed in front of that amount of people ever in my life. And when I did it, I killed the performance. I had an immaculate performance, and that applause and all the people talking about me and saying such nice things, man, and me bowing. When I bowed my head on stage during that applause, that's when I knew maybe I do have a future in acting. And so that's when I started taking it a lot more serious. I started doing more stage plays. I started doing acting competitions, man. And since then, you know, it just took off.
Okay. So how do you prepare for a new role? And how do you approach the character development?
Oh, man. So depending on the character, I take a different type of approach to it, right? So I do a lot of in-depth research. I ask a lot of questions to a lot of people that may have had some type of, you know, some type of relation to the character. And then I'm just always practicing and just trying to figure out many different ways that I can bring the best out of this character, right? Like recently, I had the opportunity to play a very prominent character named Charles, right? His name is Charles Mason. And he is long gone now. He was one of the spiritual community's most prominent pastors, you know. And he grew up in Shelby County, Tennessee, and he founded one of the world's largest churches, you know, at that time. It was called Mason Temple, Church of God in Christ. And I originally auditioned for his best friend. But the production came back to me, and then they had told me that we would love for you to play Charles Mason. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have to do a lot of things differently. So, you know, one of the things I did to prepare for him was, you know, do a lot of research and learn a lot about his life. And his parents were actually former slaves. And he was born after slave times. And, you know, and that part I knew about him, he was a very modest man, a man who was really down to earth, didn't really use profanity like that. Really nice man. And so when I played him, I knew that I had to have a different type of voice, and I had to immerse myself into that time of when he was a younger man. So learning about that time piece, learning about the attire, learning about how he was, and listening to his sermon, all of that was in my mind. And from doing that, I knew that this was probably one of the best performances that I think I have done as an actor. And I cannot wait for the world to see it.
Okay. So what has been your most challenging role to date and why?
Whew, man, I would have to say that it's probably that Charles Mason role. And I played a lot of different roles that are challenging. But I would have to say the Charles Mason role. And the reason why I say the Charles Mason role is because I was being tough on myself when it came to him, because I wanted to get his life right. You know, I wanted to get it just right and to make it believable, because, you know, when I had the honor of playing him, I knew, like, something was telling me in my mind that you were born to play him, you know, and the entire time I was playing out that part, I was telling myself I was telling myself in my head that he's looking down on you. He's trusting you to do it. You know? So I was hard on myself the entire time. And I just really wanted to kill it. See, I just really wanted to make it believable, and I wanted to make it really, really well, because I knew that a lot of people were going to be watching this. And I knew that And I knew that a lot of people were counting on me to get it right. So I would have to say the Charles Mason role.
Okay. So how do you maintain your well-being and energy levels during intense periods of filming or in theater?
Oh, man, just staying calm. Staying calm and trusting my process and trusting my ability to actually portray the character as best as I possibly can. You know, there are times where, you know, there are times where I can get a bit frustrated. And, you know, there are times where I just have to trust in it. You know, I have to trust in the director. I have to trust in our vision in order to make this come to life. So, you know, just staying true to myself, you know, talking to people, asking questions, and just always staying calm and level-headed throughout all those performances that I do.
So how do you handle the fluctuation in nature of acting work and your real life work, including the highs and lows?
One of the things that I love the most about doing this SC is that I have the opportunity to bounce back between both the acting world and the business world, right? Uh-huh. Because, you know, growing up, I always had a mind for them both. I knew that I had a mind for acting, you know, as I got older, as a teenager, but business has always been my thing. So being able to bounce back between both of those things is kind of a privilege and an honor. And so I would say that I'm pretty good at it. You know, I do a lot of stuff in the tech world, and, you know, I've done a lot of stuff in the business world as well. So I feel like I'm pretty good at balancing them both. And, you know, yeah, there's a lot of things I do, and, you know, acting and technology, investing. It's a lot of different things. And so I love bouncing back between them both.
Okay. Can you talk about a moment on set or on stage that was particularly memorable or transformative for you?
I would have to say that it's that moment when I first started acting. Like I told you, I would have to say that it's the moment that I started acting when I was in high school, and it was something that a director had told me recently. The reason why I say that it's that moment on stage that I had, because believe it or not, I didn't feel like I was really good at it. I didn't feel like I was good at anything. I really didn't feel like I was. I didn't really understand my purpose when I was a kid. But when I did that, when I had that moment and I saw all those people, it made me feel like I had a higher purpose. Like, I'm supposed to tell stories. I'm supposed to, you know, I'm supposed to perform. I'm supposed to give people something to relate to. And that was that moment. That's when that moment was mind changing for me. But the thing is, I had no idea that today I would have gotten this far in it. And had I not had that moment, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you today, Essie. I probably wouldn't. And recently, this director had told me something after a very great performance that I did. He had pulled me to the side and told me, listen, I want you to know something. You got what it takes to make it really, really far. I want you to know that. What you did today, amazing. Keep going at it, and you will make it. And I've heard that many, many times before. Don't get me wrong, but when he told me that, that's when I knew that, like, I'm doing the right thing. I'm going about it the right way. So those are the two moments that were very transformative for me.
Okay. Has there ever been a time in your career that you took a risk?
Ooh, I took a risk.
And how did it affect you?
Yes. There was definitely a time where I took a big risk, actually. There was a little bit of a campaign that I did last year around the month of September, and it was an awareness campaign towards sexual trafficking. Mm. And when I got called up to actually play in that project, I had to play the trafficker. And it was by far one of the hardest things I ever had to do because it's a very, very, very global issue that is going on. And I found out that it was not only going to be played in the United States, but it was also going to be played in the United Kingdom as well, which has already happened, by the way. And so I took a big risk by doing that because in my mind, I felt like, well, dang, if I do this, are people going to see me in a different light? Am I going to be typecasted? Is it going to change some things? And, you know, when I saw it, I was in it, but people did not get to see my entire face. And I was actually kind of glad that they didn't get to see my entire face. So that was a very big risk that I took because I knew that that was going to be getting a lot of global attention. So it was an honor to have it played in both the U.S. and the United Kingdom, but it was also a risk portraying such a character, such an evil, devious type of character. And it's a very big problem that transpires all over the world. And it's important that awareness, you know, it's important that awareness is around that topic for sure.
Okay. So how do you interact with your fans that are very supportive of your work?
Oh man. You know, it's so funny because I actually love my viewers. You know, I love the people who love me and I love my viewers. But there are also some people who you know, have a little bit against me for some of the stuff that I do, and that just comes with the territory. For starters, the reason why I do it and the reason why I put so much of my all into my roles as C is that I want the people to love what I do because that's why I do it. You know, making money is one thing, but when people watch my stuff on any type of platform, whether it be, you know, YouTube or whether it be a stage play or whether it be like the movie theater or streaming platform or anything, I want them to leave excited. I want them to leave wild. You know, I want them to have an opinion about it, whether it be good or bad. Like, for example, I work with this production company, this media company called, I've worked with them numerous amount of times. And they Amazing Things Media. They do a lot of short videos that bring a lot of attention to a lot of issues that we have within the world, right? And one that I did a couple of months ago had got over 1.8 million views.
Wow.
And I actually just did one recently that just dropped yesterday. And in less than 20 hours, we're almost over a million views on it on Facebook. And they always tell me don't read the comments because people always have something to say, but we get thousands of comments every time on those videos. And they tell me not to read them, but I read them, and you know, they make me laugh at times, you know, because people think that what we're doing is actually real, but it's not real, you know, it's just acting. And, you know, some people say good things and some people say bad things, a lot of bad things about those, but you know, it comes with the territory. And when you're reading that stuff as the actor, it feels so weird. It feels different. But, yeah. You know, you get the attention and you get the views. And, you know, that's just how the media is. You're going to always have a different perspective on everything. So I would say that I'm pretty good at, you know, balancing the good and the bad. So.
Okay. Looking to the future, are there any particular roles that you're looking to play or inspired to tackle during your career?
You know what? Yeah. As a matter of fact, I am. There are two roles that I am looking to play. One role, I am looking to play, I am hoping and I am looking to play one of history's first black car manufacturers, C.R. Patterson. I would love to play him. I'm hoping for that opportunity. And I would love to play a superhero. I would love to play the Green Lantern.
Oh, wow.
That's something I would love to play. I feel like I would make an amazing Green Lantern. That's the only hero I see myself playing. And the only reason I say that is because anybody can play the Green Lantern. And I feel like I would make an amazing Green Lantern.
Wow, that's listen. If you inspired to do it, my brother, I believe you're gonna pull it off. You know. Mm-hmm. So I know I read some things about you, and I read your bio and everything, and I know that you you pursued a bachelor's degree in business, right?
I did.
Okay, where was that? The University of Tennessee?
The University of Tennessee, Knoxville. That's it.
Okay, so my thing was too. I read something that you had some harboring feelings or some adversity towards your hometown. Can you go a little more into that?
You know, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, pretty much my whole entire life. And Memphis, Tennessee is one of those cities that's just, it's different from a lot of the cities that I have, you know, been to. I've endured a lot of hardships. I've endured a lot growing up there. And this is something that I never really admitted to anybody before, because as a man, you don't really admit this type of thing to anybody. But I've always had a lot of adversity and a lot of dislike towards my city, because I endured a whole lot of pain that I struggled to heal from. When I was coming up, I came up in probably one of the roughest parts of Memphis. A really rough part. And everybody thought different. It was the same old thing every single day. Everybody had a mindset that just wasn't really positive. Everybody was on negative stuff. There was no encouragement. There was no uplifting. There was none of that. And when I was coming up SC, I didn't know that there was something different outside of that environment. I didn't know, because I didn't have access to that. You know? And so when I was coming up, I saw a lot of things and I dealt with a lot of things too. But I was raised by both of my great grandparents growing up, and they did their best to raise me. They did their best to keep me away from those individuals and away from that environment. And I didn't understand why they did that. But as I got older, I understood. And one of the guys that was one of the biggest impacts on my life was my great grandfather. May he rest in peace. Because he put a lot of knowledge inside of me. I watched him a lot growing up. I saw the things that he did, and he sacrificed a lot to raise me and my brothers, to raise me especially. He told me that right ain't nothing but right and wrong ain't nothing but wrong. And I remember coming up, I used to have a lot of hate and anger inside of me, SC. I had a lot of that inside of me, because I didn't understand why God would put me through all of this and deal with all of this stuff that I'm dealing with. But one of the things that he told me, you know, God gives his strongest challenges. He gives it his most hardest trials to his most strongest soldiers. And he told me, don't hate. Don't be no hateful person. Because he told me that stuff will always follow you. And I remember when he was about to, you know, transition from this earth, I was the last person that had talked to him before he had died. Mm-hmm. I was only 16 at this time. And I remember, you know, I didn't have no aspirations of wanting to really better myself, SC. I didn't have no aspirations of doing that, because I didn't know what that looked like. And I remember the night before he passed away, I had thanked him for everything he had did for me, everything that he had said to me. And, you know, I told him that I needed him, because I didn't know how the hell I was going to navigate this world without this man.
Yeah.
And he told me that these were the last words that he had told me. He told me, you're going to be the one to do it. You're going to be the one to do it. You're going to be the new man. Stop thinking that you can't do something. You got the power and you got the mind to make a lot of things happen. And that was the last thing that he had told me that I told him, I don't know if I can do that. I can't do that. And he told me, you can and you will. And after that night, he passed away, SC, and it changed my whole life forever. And ever since then, I've been fulfilling that promise. And I have fulfilled that promise, and I came at peace with that when I was 22.
Okay.
And to this day, I've done that. And I've made changes, and I made the history, and I beat all them status quos, and everything I went through don't mean nothing no more because I'm better than that now. So.
Gotcha, man. So is there any advice, since you had your great grandfather to give you advice, is there any advice that you would give an upcoming actor or actress right now that you think would help them through their career and navigate through their career?
Chase the goal. Chase the goal. Don't chase the money. Chase the goal. When you chase the goal, everything will follow. Trust in yourself. Always work at something. Don't ever take no shortcuts. Do nothing. Never do that. You know, it's a lot of people out here, social media influencers. You know, it's a lot of people out here that like to put on like they really got it good. You know,
yeah.
They like to put on this facade like they're really okay, but they're not okay. They're not humble and they're not true to themselves. And because they're not humble and they're not true to themselves, they like to hurt other people.
Yeah.
They like to hurt them verbally. They like to hurt them physically. And I'm telling you to just stay true to yourself and trust your process and don't never rush nothing. And take the small opportunities, because those small opportunities could turn into big opportunities and you never know what they could lead to.
Yeah.
You always got to start somewhere and never look at where somebody is. Look at how they got there.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy because sometimes people just see the end results and be like, man, he's rich all of a sudden, you know, but they don't know how many times you got that no. They don't know how many times you had to dig it from the dirt, you know, and that's how me and you met. I was getting ready to film my movie, The Lounge. We had everything together. You auditioned, you got the part and everything, and then the producer pulled out the project. So it left, you know, but you never stopped every time. And you kept calling and checking up on me, man. And that I definitely appreciate it. You know, not to say that the other actors and actresses didn't do it neither, you know, but you took that next step, you know, and you told me, you said, listen, man, even if I got to do this part and I can't get this part, I just want to be a part of it because something bigger could come from this. You know, because the people that I was going to have on set, they had other connections. And you had the foresight and the insight to see that there was bigger things than this project that I was going to put on. You know, so he's definitely a man of his word as far as what he's giving the advice. You know, some people give advice, but they won't take it themselves. So, you know, I'm here to tell everybody that's how me and you met. You know, we met on a humble, you did an audition, and ever since that, we've been locked in, you know?
Almost definitely.
All the way up until the day the producer pulled out the project, you know? And like I tell everybody's like, yo, what's his name? This, that, and the third. Some of y'all know his name, and I'm not going to see and throw dirt on him. And like I told him, I said, listen, you don't owe me nothing, you know? We're just going to move forward. You do your thing, and I continue to do my thing, you know? So it's not worth it. Just keep pushing, just like Tony said. So I want to ask you another question. Obviously, with the world, it's crazy right now. You got wars. You got poverty rising, men versus women. It's a lot of BS. What do you think is the problem? And could you equate that into the film industry as well?
I think the problem with a lot of the stuff that's going on in the world, man, is that we keep excluding from our minds that everything that we do in this world is only temporary. Yeah. One of my cousins had, when I was 19, had told me something that I'll never forget to this day. He told me that everything in this world don't last forever at all. It's all temporary. Everything is temporary. Like, nothing lasts forever. And when he told me that, I didn't really understand it, but I processed it. And then I realized, man, that the stuff that we breaking our necks for, the stuff that we jeopardizing our health for, and the stuff that we killing each other and destroying each other, and the stuff that we doing this stuff over, man, it don't mean nothing.
Yeah.
It literally means nothing. Like, there are people, there are people who are willing to go above and beyond just to have a nice car, just to have a chain, just to have all this money, everything that depreciates in value. One of the best things I think I ever could have done in life, SC, was study business, because when I studied business, that's when I understood everything, and then I realized how stupid that I really was. Like, I was really paying $300 for shoes. Nike manufactures that stuff for pennies over in Vietnam, and I'm paying a premium for it. And I think that's what people need to start understanding, that nothing really matters. And as for the whole men versus women type of thing, you know, this is something that my generation and the Gen Zers are really doing now.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people, men and women, were raised this way. A woman is taught nowadays that she doesn't need a man. And a man is taught nowadays that, you know, keep your eye out, watch these women, woody, woody, woo, and all that stuff there. And I feel like that we have swayed away from this, from the reality of knowing that that a man needs a woman and a woman needs a man. Look, as a man, let's see, I'm not afraid to admit, I need a woman. I want a woman. And I'm not afraid to say that. You know what I'm saying? Like, there is nothing wrong with me doing that. And just like I tell a woman, there's nothing wrong with wanting or needing a man. It's okay to be independent, but don't be so independent to the point to where you don't need anybody, because everybody needs somebody.
Yeah.
Everybody does. I don't care who you are. Nobody wants to be lonely. But see, social media has put this notion into our heads that, like, we don't need nobody. We can do bad all by ourselves. But at the same time, we're destroying ourselves because of that. And I don't want no part of that.
Yeah.
I don't want no part of it. Like, I don't want to be involved in none of the stuff that my generation is doing, because it don't make no sense. So that's my take on it. I think we just need to understand that all the stuff that we bickering and fighting each other and killing each other over don't mean nothing. It don't. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are people right now in the Middle East dying, babies dying every single day, and we arguing with each other about whether or not a man should pay for a meal out at dinner. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't want nothing to do with my generation, SC. I don't want nothing to do with it.
All right.
They can have it.
Listen, I get it. Trust me, I get it, man. I'm gonna keep my comments to myself, you know. But I got another question for you, man. How do you deal with romantic scenes? Have you ever played any romantic scenes, and how do you deal with it?
I have. I have played many of romantic scenes, and all of the scenes all of the romantic scenes that I've been in with all of the women are gorgeous. Amazing, amazing actresses. Some of them are even my friends. Amazing women. One of the things about me, SC, is that I don't like for women to be uncomfortable around me. And I know that there's a lot of stuff in the air and all that stuff going on. And so every time I'm involved in like intimate scenes or like romantic scenes, man, I'm always making sure that she's comfortable. And all of the women that I have acted with, they can attest to that. I love to make them feel comfortable. And I always want to make sure that I build trust.
Yeah.
Building trust is the most important thing. And when you and when people see some of the scenes that I'm in with them with, like you can see that they're comfortable. They're okay with me because as the man, I feel like it's my job to make sure that it's like that. I mean, I'm just gonna keep it 100 with you. The production don't really care how some productions don't really care how no man feels, man. Yeah. It's just all about the woman, bro, and that's okay. You know what I'm saying? So, so yeah, I feel like I do a pretty good job at that, and I feel like I do a great job at making the woman feel very comfortable, and we build a lot of trust, et cetera. We do all of that, and all of them can attest to that if you ask me.
Okay, I'm going to stay on that subject for a little while because I know there's a lot of people that watch movies, and they be like, man, I know he must have did this, he must have did that. That's crazy. Have you ever had to wear or had the female ever had to wear a modesty garment?
Define modesty in that sense.
You know how when they have the barrier between y'all, when y'all have like your shirts and everything off?
I will say there are some women who are not like 100% okay with that. Mm-hmm. They're not okay with that. In most cases, some are. You know, if you're pretty good at making her feel comfortable, they'll be okay with it. But 9 times out of 10, most women do keep their guard up. But if you have a good chemistry and a good relationship with them, they'll be, you know, comfortable with that. Now, if they're not okay with that, I you know, I truly understand that. That's okay. You have the right to feel the way that you feel. But yes, I would say it's kind of half and half. Some women are okay with it, and some women are not. So,
do you ever have a intimacy coach on set?
Yes, for some.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, for some of them I have. For some of them I have, and I will say it can be kind of weird to have them there at times because I will say that. That was one production that I worked on back in 2022. You know, we had a bed scene. Mm-hmm. And when you have scenes like this, nobody else can be in the room but the cinematographer, the director, and the intimacy coordinator in most cases. And when we did it, we were comfortable. But when she was there, in my opinion, it felt so weird because when she was talking to us, you know, she was talking in like this weird voice, you know, like she was talking really, really low and talking in like this weird voice. And I'm just like, OK, so the way that you're talking makes this seem so weird.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I understood it, you know, so yes, there have been times where I have had the intimacy coordinator on set, and 9 times out of 10, they work with us before we film to kind of, you know, put us through a lot of exercises to make each other more comfortable, and stuff like that. So,
yeah, you ever thought about doing that, becoming an intimacy coach? I think you would be perfect for it only because of your personality and the person that you know, because it always seems like there's a lot of care with you with your fellow actors and actresses.
Yeah, most definitely.
Would you think that would be something you would be interested in stepping in those shoes too?
Most likely. I could see myself doing that. More than likely.
Okay.
Probably. I would have to give it a try and you know, see if it's really me or not. But you know, who knows? Yep. Only time would tell.
Yeah, it never hurts to try, man. You know,
yeah.
I think most times with people, you know, it hurts the fact that you didn't try and time slipped away. And so time got in between. You could have tried when you were younger, you know, but you're never too old. You're never too old to learn nothing, you know. So if you had the opportunity to work on a production set or a production company with a production company, who would that be? What production company?
I'll say, so I'm going to give you, that's a good one. I'm going to give you an individual.
Okay.
I would love to work with. And this individual owns a production company, I believe, but I would love to work with Will Smith. I would love to work with Will Smith. But, and I'm going to tell you why I would love to work with Will Smith. Will Smith was one of the guys that I watched growing up a lot. I remember as a kid, I was watching iRobot growing up. And Will Smith is actually the reason why I actually wanted to get into acting in the first place. Because I just, you know, watching cinema, watching TV all the time, you know, I'm just like, man, this stuff looks really, really cool. Like it looks really cool. And Will Smith did a lot of cool roles, man. A lot of cool roles. And I just feel like being able to act alongside of him, like to just be on the production with him, he's such a down to earth and modest dude, I learned. You know what I'm saying? And he could probably give, I can see it now, man. I can see him giving me a lot of jewels and giving me a lot of encouragement. I could just see him being a mentor on set for me. You know, I could see that, and I can't really see that with anybody else. But Will is just a modest dude, man. Really, really cool and my modest dude from what I've heard. I know a few people who have been on set with him, and he's just a down to earth soul, man. Very down to earth soul. That's actually where I model my craft from. You know, watching Will. You know what I'm saying? And just like when I'm acting. It's almost hard to believe that I'm acting sometimes. And that's because I grew up watching him a lot. You know, like I like to model my skill after his. Because when he's acting, it's hard to believe that he's really acting. Like it's almost like he's really that person, you know. So yeah. Definitely Will Smith for sure. A lot of other people too, but Will Smith is number one on my list.
Okay. I like Will. I have my you know, reservations from previous acts that I've witnessed and the world has witnessed, you know, but for the most part, he's an excellent actor, you know.
Oh, yeah. Best in the world, if you ask me.
What type of films would you stay away from?
I would definitely stay away from a lot of roles that are, I'll say this. If I can't portray or play that role in the right way, I won't play it. Okay. And that's no disrespect to the role or the character or the idea of it. It's just that when I do something, it has to have meaning to it.
Okay.
It has to have meaning to it. And if it doesn't have a meaning to it, and if I feel like I can't portray it well, then I won't do it. Those are the type of roles that I choose to stay away from professionally and personally.
What type of encouragement do you get from family? I know you say your great grandparents raised you, but are there any other family members in the picture? And if so, do they support you?
Yeah. I feel like that's a pretty good amount of support from my family nowadays. You know, when I was coming up, even from the outside world, you know, a lot of people didn't really expect a lot to come from me. A lot of people didn't really expect me to really be much in the world. And I knew that. You know, I knew that people were saying that type of stuff. You know what I'm saying? I heard that my whole life as a child. But, you know, I was really good at blocking that out. I was really good at blocking that out. And nowadays, if those individuals, I mean, I don't care if they pay attention to me or not. But I follow a lot of those individuals on social media nowadays. And nowadays, and this is one word of advice I would like to give to people. May look down on you at one point in your life. They may talk down. They might say this. They might say that. But when you come up and when you start doing things that's out of their league, they're not going to have nothing else to say anymore. They're going to leave you alone. They're not going to mess with a picture of you.
Yeah.
They're going to leave that alone. You know, And so I feel like I do get a lot of respect and love from my family in certain kinds of ways. You know, they are proud of what I have done, because no one has really accomplished what I've accomplished in my family. No one really has. And I will say that they are proud and they are glad that I'm making things happen. They may have struggled to see it at one point, but they see it now. And that's all that matters. And that's all that I'm focusing on. I focus on the family that focuses on me, that loves me. And that's all that matters.
Great. How do you handle constructive criticism?
I handle constructive criticism very well, especially as an actor. You know, I remember back when I was in college and I was taking theater classes. I'm not going to say his name, but this guy, he was real tough, really, really tough. And he had a different type of ideal when it came to acting. But he was great at it, man. He was great at it. So good at acting, like a stage guy. And I remember one time he told me that I wasn't really good at acting. He told me I wasn't a great actor, which is kind of hard to believe today because I've done so much and had so many great performances. But when he told me that, that did kind of get to me a little bit, and I actually believed it for a moment. But, you know, I took that as him looking out for me. I guess you could say that. We'll say that I guess he was trying to look out for me. And when he told me that, that's when I made those adjustments and I got better. And now I can barely get turned down for a role nowadays. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah,
I handle constructive criticism very well, and I'm very good at taking direction and making those adjustments as needed. And I make them quickly and I make them the right way. So I take handling it very, 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 very well. I don't get angry and I don't get upset. I just take it as like, okay, well, maybe you need to work on this, Tony. I work on it, come back, I get it just right.
Now, you told us who you would love to work with as far as a male. Who would you love to work with if you were the leading role and you needed a supporting actress? Who would it be and why?
Oh, that's a tough one, because I've worked with a lot of I've worked with a lot of amazing actresses, a lot of amazing actresses who are up and coming. But if I had to like guess on the kind of woman that I would want to work with, I had this person in my head a few days ago. Let me see, she was in something. You know, I can't think of her name right now.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a black actress.
Mm-hmm.
She's a black actress who lives in California. She's an influencer and stuff like that there. I would love to work with her.
Is that the girl with the green or yellow dress? Shantae Renee, I think.
No, I can't believe I can't think of a name because I see her all the time. You know,
bad. I be talking about people and I forget their name, but I see that picture in my head. I be like, oh man. And you just hope that people see the picture too.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's a lot, but she's the one that I would love to work with the most. And by she, I don't even know who she is, but she's in my mind though. She's in my mind now, and she's an up and coming girl.
Mm.
Now, as far as someone who's already established, God, that's a tough one, man. That's a tough one because there's so many great ones out there.
Yeah,
so many great ones. So many great ones, but I would have to say Taraji B. Henson.
Okay,
I would love to work with Taraji, and it's because, you know, she, in my opinion, she don't get enough respect as an actress, but she's brilliant.
Yeah,
she's brilliant, and if she's in the movie, she's the reason that I'm going to watch it.
Okay,
so I would love to work with her.
If they, because I'm hearing controversy about them making an Acrimony 2. I don't know how true it is. And if they had to make a reboot. Remake, restructure type movie, which one would you want it to be, and what part would you play in that movie?
Man, I was just thinking about this the other day.
Because it seems like all of the reboots and everything else is not really making any money. And I had a conversation with another author a couple of days ago, and we were talking about this, and he made a valid point. He says that all of the classics are classics for a reason. Like, you don't see them doing a remake of Casablanca and everything else, but everybody else wants to jump into this pool of remakes and reboots and everything. And I personally believe that it's sellable, because you think about movies that had a following back then. They have another generation that came behind that generation. You understand what I'm saying? And that generation could be new fans of that work. So I'm on the fence with that.
So am I. I'm kind of on the fence with it too, because I do agree. There are some films you should never touch again. Like Friday is a movie you should never touch.
So what did you think about the Friday After Next and everything else after that?
Oh, those were good. Okay. Those were absolutely amazing.
So you're not talking about the sequels and the trilogies. You're talking about basically just remaking the whole thing. Like, I really don't care too much for a House Party, the remake.
Neither did I.
It was
good.
It was funny, but I think they should have just left it alone. Or they could have called this something else.
Yeah, they could have called it something else. Yeah, because, you know, no one can match that performance that they had back in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just a different type of time, a different type of atmosphere. You know, now you can always do a remake of Space Jam.
You know what I'm saying? They did, didn't they? They made another one.
Yeah. Made one with LeBron.
Yeah. Okay. Because that's what they did with the House Party. They did the same thing with LeBron.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep, they did that. Yeah, I feel like it's some movies that you just should not touch. Like, you know, I mean, I feel like you should add to it. Make like a sequel or make like a prequel or something like that there. I mean, but trying to remake it, I'm not really a fan of that as much. Now, to your question, it's kind of hard to see myself in a remake of something. Mm-hmm. However, if I were to see myself in something new, or if they were to do like a remake of something, it would probably be Star Wars. And I would see myself as a Sith. And the only reason I say that is because Lucasfilm, they're the only production company that is good at going backwards.
Yes. Yes.
They're the only ones that are good at that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They're the only ones that are good at going backwards. And Star Wars has been around for a long, long, long time. So I think that's the only production I can see myself like doing a remake with and all of that, because you can add so many things in there without it messing up the timeline or anything like that. So So that's just my opinion. Someone else may disagree, but yeah, that's my opinion.
Okay. If you had the opportunity to be in a horror movie, Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street, and why? Which one would you choose?
Probably Nightmare on Elm Street. And the only reason I say Nightmare on Elm Street, man, is because when I'm acting in something that needs to convey a lot of emotion, I'm damn great at doing that. And Friday After Next, like this, not Friday After Next, but Nightmare on Elm Street, this guy is messing with their dreams.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, there have been some instances where I've had some pretty bad dreams. I've had some that have woken me up pretty quick. You know what I'm saying? And I've had some moments where I've had a witch on my back, you know, and by witch I mean like sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
So, it would definitely be that one, because I know I could be extremely dramatic for it without question.
Okay. producer that you could work with, if John Singleton was still alive, or Spike Lee, and why?
Definitely Spike Lee. I would love to work with Spike Lee. And the reason why I say that is because, man, I'd be able to ask him so many questions about things, you know, that's if he would listen to me, but I would ask him so many questions, you know, because see, this is the thing, I see, like me, I've always been the type of person, I watch and I learn. I don't overtalk people who have, see, this is one of the things that people in my generation rarely ever do nowadays. A lot of us don't respect the OGs, man. A lot of us don't respect the OGs. Like, they always saying, like, they old, they dried up. Like, bro, why on earth would I disrespect the OGs? These folks been doing this stuff for the longest.
Yeah.
Spike Lee, Lee Daniels, all those people. Like, they the OGs. Like, they know a lot. They know more than me, man. Like, look, if I'm fortunate enough to get older, I want to be like those guys. Why would I look down on them? They've done a lot more than I have. You know what I'm saying? And that's something that I feel like, these like younger people nowadays just don't understand, bro. They disrespect the OGs, and you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
So it's definitely them. It's definitely him. I would love Spike Lee.
All right. Quentin Tarantino or Stephen King, and why?
Quentin Tarantino, without a doubt. Quentin Tarantino, without a doubt. And the reason why I say him, first of all, both of them are good. Stephen King is like kind of like a modern day Edgar Allan Poe. The reason why I say Quentin Tarantino is because he doesn't care. He doesn't care what other people think. He does what he wants when he wants it. And that's what I like about him. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like Django. He didn't give a damn about how nobody felt about that. He lets you be you. He lets you act out the part as like he lets you do you. And that's what I love about him. So he doesn't care about this. And see, that's why I love older people, because you guys don't give a damn about cancel culture. Like, who's going to cancel y'all? You know what I'm saying? Like who's going to cancel y'all? No one's going to cancel you guys, because y'all not in that type of stuff, which is fortunate. So he doesn't care. And that's what I love about him.
Yeah. So, in closing, can you give the audience contact information for you? Yeah. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, any way that they can reach out to you, or a producer that wants to put you in one of their films?
Most definitely. For anyone who is looking to follow me on social media, you can follow me on Facebook. Just type in my name, Tony Hell III, and I'll pop up, or you can Google me. You can type in Tony Hell III on Google, and my name will come up. You'll have access to all of my IMDb information. A lot of my journal articles and all that, my academic information and all. And if you are a producer or a writer and you want to collaborate, we don't even have to, it doesn't even have to be about business. Like, you could just call me and talk with me and learn about me, and I learn about you. Just email me at hailtony16@gmail.com. Again, hailtony16@gmail.com. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, just follow me at outrageous_hell. That's spelled OWT, rageous underscore hell on Instagram. So yeah, I'm always posting. I'm always doing different things, and I'm grinding. I love to work. I love to create. That's what I love to do. So.
Man, I appreciate you again, Tony, man. It's always a pleasure chopping it up. This is not our first interview with each other. We did an interview on another podcast before, you know.
We did.
You gave a lot of insight on the business and, you know, how everything is going with you. And also when we did the auditions, you know? So.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. I'm always, yeah. What people don't know, man, is that I love doing it. And no one has ever regretted having me on their production set because I've always, I'm professional. I'm calm. I don't have an ego. And I treat everybody with kindness, love, and respect all the time.
Definitely, man. And so again, man, I want to appreciate you and thank you for coming on the show.
No problem.
Thank my audience for tuning in. And this is another episode of The Voice Behind the Pen. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.